Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Culture Map presents What's Eric Eating? From the Gal Media Studios in Houston, Texas, here's Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. I have Alex Padilla and Jason Gould from the original Ninfas on Navigation coming up in a little bit. But first, I'm joined this week by my co-host, the proprietor of SwankyMaven.com, Felice Sloan. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey. I want to give you a little sophisticated hey, since you changed my introduction a little bit.
Well, you're changing up a little bit what you do, how you present yourself online.
Yeah, we're so. Going to be work. It's the same but different. So you guys will see it beginning of April.
Right. You've been more assertive in promoting yourself as the Swanky Maven.
Right.
And, you know, it's not, there's no drama with you and
right. Urban Swank is not going away. It'll just
changing.
It's just changing, right? It'll be Urban Swank, and then it'll direct, you know, for all things lifestyle, Swanky Maven. And then travel, it'll be Shanna. So
right, going somewhere soon.
Yeah. Correct. But then we'll still have the social part of it and a lot of projects that we have going on as Urban Swank will continue.
Right. And I just saw both of you together doing your thing at the Rodeo Houston Best Bites competition.
Yeah, we got to put some swank on the stank, you know, put a little swank, Urban Swank stank on it.
All right. So with that, let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one. Messina Hoff, the Texas winery, has big plans for the Houston area. We were just out at Harvest Green for Chef Fest this weekend. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but they're going to open a massive new facility as part of that housing development with a winery, a production facility, a warehouse that's going to handle all of their shipping, because obviously Houston is much closer to transportation hubs than Brenham is. 130-seat restaurant, covered patio, and then kind of long-term plans for an event space that'll hold about 300 people. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different angles to cover, but are you a Messina Hoff drinker?
I am, and I'm a fan of the families, and I'm actually surprised that it's taken this long for them to do something big in Houston. Like, we've gone down there for Harvest several times, and they're always hinting about different things that they've been working on. So I don't know if this has been in works for a while, like years ago with some other development.
Well, no, they've had their eye on Harvest Green for at least a year, because it was sort of quietly buzzed at the last Chef Fest that there might be an announcement. I think that's very germane, because they have similar facilities in Bryan,
right,
and in Grapevine and in Fredericksburg. So if you sort of think of them, well, Bryan is its own thing, but if you think of, you know, Grapevine kind of covering Dallas, and Fredericksburg kind of covering right. Austin, San Antonio, then this has been a long time coming,
right,
that Houston gets a little love. I think, you know, I think I'm going to have to do a show about Texas wine specifically, because I don't feel as educated about kind of how it fits in with, you know, the best of California or what's coming over from Europe.
Correct.
But I do get the sense that Texas wine is on the way up, and that there are there's sort of the Messina Hoff that you can buy in grocery stores and wine shops, and then there's the vintages that they reserve for their various properties. And I think, you know, I've heard from some people that maybe some of that stuff is more compelling and maybe not talked about as much just because you have to go there to get it.
Right. Which would make sense, because when you're there and they do the dinners, it's definitely, they have wines that you would only be able to get there. So it makes sense to, it's an active, you know, it's an active winery. They want people to come. They want to do the experience. And also they're very big on their positioning of promoting and being responsible with promoting Texas wines.
Yeah, and that interactive element, I mean, they're going to have about 5 acres of grapes, so they're going to make about 5,000 gallons of wine a year there, which sounds like a pretty decent amount of wine to me, and that 130-seat restaurant, and that Harvest Green housing development has its own farm, and then it's right next to where Loam Agronomics does all of their farming.
Right.
So the ability to utilize that kind of very local produce at the restaurant is going to obviously make the quality of the food even better.
Right. And it's really, like, it's smart. Like, as we said, we'll get into it when we get into the Chef Fest aspect. But you have that whole built in the community, getting back to it. Right now, we assume everyone's, you know, local. You know, they do local sourcing. Those are questions people ask. You're sourcing locally, right? Something. So now it's kind of like, next level, we're doing some things that we see other areas doing with what Messina Hoff is doing.
Right. So for anyone who went to Chef Fest, there was a big kind of plowed out patch of dirt next to the VIP parking area, right next to the entrance of Chef Fest. That patch of dirt is where the winery is going to be. So it's right there on Harlem Road, right at the intersection of West Airport, right inside of the Grand Parkway. And it's going to be, I mean, you know, this is kind of early 2020 is kind of where they're looking in terms of a timeline. But it's going to be a pretty impressive facility when it opens.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. And then, you know, that's kind of my hood. So anything that's outside the loop, you inner looper snobs. Yeah. I'm excited. Just like y'all get excited. I'm excited for the 99 explosion. That's what I'm calling it.
All right, topic number two. Speaking of wine news, Master Sommelier June Rodill is leaving Austin's McGuire Mormon Hospitality Group to join Goodnight Hospitality. That's the company behind Goodnight Charlie's, but they have three projects upcoming: Montrose Cheese and Wine, Rosie Cannonball, and March. Now, we had Adam Garcia and Felipe Riccio from the chefs behind Rosie Cannonball and March on the show pretty recently to talk about kind of what's going on with that. And then obviously Goodnight Hospitality was founded by David Keck, another master sommelier. That's how June becomes on board, because they've been friends for several years now. They've worked together on the TechSom event. And I mean, it's hard to overstate what a significant development this is. In talking to, you know, McGuire Mormon is a very prominent Austin hospitality group. They have Jeffrey's and Perla's and a whole bunch of other 10 restaurants in Austin.
That are very good, by the way.
They're like, very good.
Right.
June is a partner in a restaurant called June's All Day under that umbrella.
Yes.
And she will, and that restaurant has gotten a ton of attention. She'll maintain that partnership.
Okay.
I compared it to what it would be like locally if Sean Beck left working for Tracy Vaught and Hugo Ortega.
That's a good take. Yeah, because locally, like, wine people know her, and people that kind of, I've heard her because, like you said, I go to Austin and those restaurants, and then I've gone to June's.
So. Yeah. So tell us about June's, because I mean, not that it's directly germane on what she'll be doing good night, but I think it gets to a certain aesthetic and kind of a perspective.
Yeah, and it's really, you know what, it's, I'm trying to think what I even would compare it to, because it's really small, but very high end, where you think of experience, very experience driven, personalized service. We went there one weekend, was kind of busy. We had, we didn't have reservations, we had to wait, but that's what made me excited, because I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Now, I think what she's going to be able to bring to that, well, I don't know. I don't know what she's going to be able to bring as far as what their big, I don't know her personality. Does
well,
that make sense?
Right. I mean, well, she, I mean, having met her briefly, I would describe her as pretty outgoing. She's very well thought of in the wine world.
Right.
And she brings a lot of operational experience, right? Helping that group manage all of those different restaurant concepts, you know, and as Goodnight prepares to quadruple the number of properties it's running, even though they're all physically very close together, they're all going to have their different needs. And she brings a lot of experience helping get good restaurants off the ground.
Right. Well, so if that's, if we use her spot and what she's done with the, if her role in the others, other restaurants in her former life, it makes sense, right? Because it's her restaurant, well-oiled machine. Like, it's just kind of seamless.
Right. Yeah, so I think this will be really, this is, and this is another sign that Goodnight Hospitality is not messed around. You know, the March is going to be this, like, very fine dining, very pristine kind of experience. Rosie Cannonball, you know, pizza, pasta, wood-burning oven. Very
right
cool. Yeah, very much up my alley. I mean, it's somewhere like in my sort of mental conception, not that I think the chefs would be very happy with this characterization, but, you know, somewhere between Polly's and Provisions.
Right.
Is kind of how I'm thinking of it. And then we'll see what it's like when it actually opens.
Oh, but right.
Until then, that's how I'm thinking about it. And then Montrose Cheese and Wine. I mean, obviously she and David will work together on on buying the wine and setting the wine list for all these various properties. But she brings so much more to the table than just wine knowledge. And, you know, you'll, you know, starting April 1st, roughly, you'll see her at their, well, at Goodnight Charlie's to start. And then as these other concepts open, you'll see her there too.
And then she's a female. I'm always about, you know, girl power, because we need more in the industry all the way across. So there you go.
Yeah. Not a lot of prominent Asian females working in restaurants, right? Like a lot of our local influencers, that's a very well represented demographic. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, you know, working in restaurants, you know, I don't know, if I start calling people out, like it's going to seem I'm going to leave someone out and I'm going to get myself in trouble. But
right, so but, we just but, leave it general, right?
But, well, but like
I know exactly you're right.
But it's, there's not that true. Many, right?
It's
like
not.
If there's so. So we can always have more of that, and that she's getting an opportunity to come in as a partner in Goodnight Hospitality, and build a legacy here in Houston. You know, it's a big move. It's a significant loss for McGuire Mormon, but you know, I think at the end of the day, the opportunity to work with David and to build something here was too good to resist.
Right, I agree.
All right, and then I had. Topic number three, I had John Peterson on the show to talk about the Rice Box, but we haven't done the front half of the show talk about the Rice Box opening in River Oaks.
Well, let's just have a moment of silence, because when Eric broke this, all I could think was, I'm like, Eric is probably crying. He's so excited. I mean, wow, you usually throw it to me. I'm going to take over your show for a moment. Eric. So how do you feel about that?
Well, let me start by saying I always joke about what's the worst kept secret in Houston food, that the Rice Box was opening next to Backstreet Cafe was the worst kept secret in Houston food, that was that building. So now we have to find a new one. I don't quite know what it is yet, you know, but that always emerges. So now I will say I have a deep affection for American style Chinese food, right? General Tso's chicken is much more a comfort food to me than like meatloaf or some of the other, you know, some of the other things that people would cite as comfort food. I didn't grow up eating meatloaf. I grew up eating beef with broccoli and General Tso's chicken and egg rolls and dumplings. So I have been a patron of the Rice Box basically since the time it hit the streets, because as I said last week, I knew John Peterson from the world of, you know, guys in their 20s who spent too much money on their cars, you know, more than, I mean, damn near like 15 years ago. So I've known John for a really long time. Yeah, I am thrilled, right, to finally get to the answer
You're
to your question.
So excited.
I am thrilled. I am a Rice Box fan. I have been a Rice Box fan longer than I've been writing about restaurants, and to have them back in the neighborhood, because there are times when I think to myself, oh, you know, I would like the Rice Box for dinner tonight. And not that the Heights is such a far drive, but it's far enough and there's limited interior seating. Right. And so I just pass. I go somewhere else. I get something else. Now that it's going to be on my side of the bayou, especially in the beginning, you're going to see me there a lot.
A lot. I know. I was like, Eric is so excited. I like a Rice Box, but I'm like, I can't really do it justice. I just needed to give it to you because I'm like, I like it. If I'm in the area and I'm feeling it, I will go to Rice Box, but I'm not making, you know, special trips. Not for nothing, you know, but.
Well, and to John's credit, you know, that menu has evolved, right? When it was a food truck, there were 5 chicken dishes,
right?
Now there's noodle dishes and beef and.
Right. It has something of a little bit more to offer.
Oh, yeah. The menu is much broader. Yeah. It's much more diverse. A lot of it's gluten-free, actually, which he doesn't really talk about very much. It's just, but the, you know, they use cornstarch instead of flour, so it's just sort of naturally gluten-free. It's all made in woks now. We talked about that in the last episode. So it's a very good version of that style of food, and I have such an emotional need for Chinese-American food from time to time that, yeah, this is definitely going to be a thing for me.
And I love that they did start out as a food truck, and you just see them become their success continuing, right? They're just growing and getting a larger audience and larger following. So I'm always excited about that because it's good food.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Topic number 4, the sushi hand roll trend is coming to the Heights, courtesy of Hendo from...
Didn't see that one coming, huh?
Jason Andaya, a native Houstonian who's been working in LA restaurants for a while. I'm in on the poke trend. I like the poke burrito, sort of, sometimes. I think they're gimmicky. I don't know that I care that much about, like, hand roll versus sliced maki. I don't know. I guess I recognize that this is a thing nationally. It's making its way here slowly, just like poke did a couple of years ago, where there was no poke and now there's just like an absolute shit ton of poke.
Right.
Right. So I think hand roll is the next thing like that that's coming.
You know, I'm with you. I would need to talk to someone that's like over the top crazy for sushi, and I love sushi and I get the hand rolls, but the whole, I don't get the trend. I don't, cause I'm like, I can go places and they're, oh, what you want? Do you know you want a hand roll?
Right. I've always eaten hand rolls.
I've always eaten. Yeah.
It never occurred
to
me that I would want to go to a sushi restaurant that only serves hand rolls.
That's it. So I would, if someone could explain to me why that's like a bigger deal besides it being a gimmick, I'm all here for it. But I just, again, much no shade to them. I want them to be successful. But will I just go and say, oh my gosh, well, let me just go because all they have is hand rolls? Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, this is, again, my side of the bayou. Is this going to get me to cross? I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something about hand rolls that lets them be more creative in what they put than a regular maki roll, or maybe you'll like the form factor, right? You get three hand rolls, and you know, a beer or something. It's like a light lunch. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just going
to
depend.
I need to do more research to really that's what I'm saying. I really need to understand why this is, besides it being like kind of gimmicky.
Yeah.
Right. Again, because sushi is probably really good sushi. Nope. Not debating that. But I need someone to help me understand. So I'm going to actually probably turn to Google to see if I can get more information of why I should be super excited about Hando.
Yeah. Well, we have some time. I mean, this is kind of late this year, you know, early next year. It's going to be a while, but you know, that was in the news, so I did want to just note that it was happening.
And if anyone knows, feel free, you know, like if that's your thing and you're like, you hear this and you're like, they're crazy. You're just dying to tell us, please DM, you know, Eric at Culture Map or Felice at Swanky Maven. Let us know because we want to know, right?
Yeah, if you're a passionate Tamaki advocate,
please we want to hear from you. Yeah.
All right. That does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So, Felice, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk about a couple of recent openings, starting with Quirky's Barbecue. This is the Memphis-based barbecue joint. They just opened their first Houston location out in your neck of the woods, out in Katy on I-10 in a former Outback Steakhouse. I put a picture of my four meat plate at Quirky's on my Instagram story, and immediately the question started coming in, how was it? And I said, you're just going to have to wait for the podcast when we talk about Quirky's Barbecue. So you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
Well, you know, you went after I did.
That's right.
And
we
I'm
did not
dying,
go together.
So I'm dying because you know how I felt. So I'm dying to hear how you felt so then we can bring the conversation together.
All right. So I think the first thing to recognize is that this is not a Texas barbecue joint.
Correct.
Right? Memphis barbecue is different than Texas barbecue. Now they're doing some Texas stuff, but the style of ribs, for example, is different. It's
right.
Saucier, it's sweeter. I got them what they call muddy, which is both sauced and with a dry rub on it. That was my server said, what kind of ribs do you want? I was like, what do you recommend? And he said, oh, get the muddy. That's what Quirky's is known for. I really liked the ribs, right? I thought they were cooked well. They weren't that like fall off the bone mush that you sometimes see. They were sweet. Like I like my ribs kind of sweet and spicy. Like when a Papa Charlie's rib is really banging, when that's like really, really spot on, like that might be my favorite rib. Grant Pickerton does great ribs. These were not at that. They didn't have that spice, that heat that I like in a perfect rib, but I enjoyed the ribs. Now, it gets a little more problematic after that, right? I'm just going to say it, the brisket was not good. Like just flat out, it was too lean. It had dried out. It wasn't a good example of Texas barbecue brisket.
Right. Okay.
Chicken, juicy, nicely smoked. No problem with the chicken. I'd order that again. Pulled pork was dry and just kind of covered in the sauce. I think I've been eating too much pulled pork at Truth. That may have spoiled me for other people's pulled pork. But Leonard is like very, the pitmaster of Truth, Leonard Botello, is very aggressive with the way he kind of mixes the meat and the sauce together as they serve it to you, which keeps the pulled pork nice and juicy. This was not that. And then I just for funsies, I got a side of the Proshik's beef and pork sausage as an appetizer so that I could have a five meat plate and, you know, good smoke in that. That's a very classic Texas barbecue sausage. That was fine. There were things I really liked about Quirky's. I like that it's table service. You don't have to stand in line and go through the cafeteria. I like that they had live music. I like that they have a full bar. Not that I got a cocktail in the middle of a Saturday afternoon, but it feels very family friendly to me. They had live music going. you know, I like the atmosphere. I like the decor. I do feel like the Texas component of their barbecue needs a lot of work.
That's very fair. Let me ask you before I start with mine. Did they know, did you get outed? Did they know you were
no,
you?
I don't think that they,
okay.
I don't think that they did. I have had phone conversations with the local franchisee, but there was nothing in my interaction with my server. No manager came over to ask me how my meal was going. You know, all the usual things that usually give away when I've been made, and I didn't tell them I was
coming. Right, got it. Okay, so I'm going to start with the positives. All the things that you said, I think it's a beautiful restaurant. I love that there's full service bar, the band, table service, all of that. The chicken, I thought it was good because I usually don't get chicken. So I'm like, let me, you know.
Right, they have that four meat plate for $30.
Right.
That gives you all the meats and is a very generous portion. Exactly. I didn't come close to finishing.
Yeah, so I'm like, let me get this. And I did the whole thing you did with the sausage.
Great minds.
Here is, I know, right? But I also got the catfish, too. You didn't get the catfish. The thing that I have a problem with is because it's not Texas barbecue and they're representing Memphis barbecue. So if that was someone's first interaction with them far as a Memphis barbecue, they even do the whole barbecue spaghetti and all that, the Memphis thing. I think that they may, depending on their experience, because it seems like they're hit or miss, they would, the day I went, they probably would not want to ever eat Memphis barbecue. And that's my problem with when places are representing in another place. It was, the ribs were epic fail. There was someone else there from the industry, I won't name them. They were there the same night. They were there an hour before me. They showed me pictures of their food because they're like, oh gosh, yours looks 10 times better. And it did. I wouldn't have even eaten theirs, but the ribs were a fail. I just did the dry rub. They were not good.
In what way were they not good?
There's a dry rub. They were dry. It was, they just didn't taste. I've had the dry rub ribs before, and my problem with the Corky's here is the same that I had when I first had Corky's in Arkansas. I'm like, it doesn't really represent to me, I guess, because I've been to Memphis and I've had dry rub. That's not my favorite, but I'm like, oh, it's good. Like, if this is what this is, it's good, right, for Memphis dry rub ribs. They just weren't executed very well. Right, there was highs and lows because then the brisket dry off. I didn't even want any more of that. The sausage was good. The chicken was good. If I were to go back, I would get the catfish. The catfish was, even the sides were not, no, they were wrong.
Oh, there's one other thing I should mention is they have a bottle of their barbecue sauce on the table.
Okay.
I gave that a little squirt. Did it remind you of apple pie filling? Because it was like very sweet, very, I got like cinnamon apple pie spice.
It was so sweet, Eric, because you know I'm not very saucy. So I'm like, if I have to use your sauce or something wrong, but I always taste it. I taste it in my face. I'm like, oh my, it tastes like a dessert.
Yeah, very sweet.
It tastes like a dessert. So I'm like, I'm not putting this on anything. So I was done with that. Yeah. So the question is, because you said you had more highs and lows. Would you make the drive and go back?
No. I mean, probably it, you know, it's a significant drive for me. And with road construction on Saturday and freeways and exits and all that, to get from Montrose to I-10, I took surface streets and I happened to drive past Truth Barbecue on my way to I-10. And I thought to myself, like, why am I driving past Truth Barbecue? Like, if I'm having barbecue for lunch, why would I ever drive past Truth Barbecue to go to Corky's? But I, you know, I have an obligation,
sure,
a professional obligation to try to experience Corky's. So but would I do that again?
Right.
No. But they have apparently they have their eyes on the location on Navigation Boulevard. You know, when it's closer to me, I'm not sure that it's for me, but like I said, in Katy, very family friendly, pretty reasonable in terms of its prices for what you get. I can see it being successful.
I can too. I can too, because there's a lot of chains that I'm like, are you serious? And they're packed out. But I think that's because people don't want to drive. That's a whole nother show, a whole nother day. So I think they will be successful with all the things that they offer. The atmosphere, the family friendly, like you said, the band, all of that. And they're things that are good on the menu.
All right. Well, let's talk about a meal that we enjoyed more. We went to Pepper Twins, their new location in City Center, whereas we ducked into Corky's anonymously. We were not anonymous at Pepper Twins. It was a media event. We were sitting with the owner of Pepper Twins at the table who did all the ordering. So I guess take the quality of our meal with a grain of salt. But we really like just about everything we ate at Pepper Twins.
Right. And I will say, let me add this, even though that was the owner was there, she ordered for us. We're both Pepper Twin fans anyway, though. Like, you go to the Pepper Twins off West Grand Montrose. You go to that one. I go to that one. I go to the one in Katy. So I like Pepper Twins anyway. So that experience, that location's a little bit different. She ordered things that I've never tasted before. I thought it was a very good experience. And then their specialties at that location are a little different than the other. Each location has their own signature dishes that you won't find at the other locations, which gives you reason to have to go to these particular different locations.
Right. And I'll talk about a couple of favorite dishes in just a second. But first, it's located next to Ra in what used to be the Grub Burger space. So it's kind of at the, I guess that's the south end of City Center. It's a little bit hidden. It's up from Hop Dottie.
Right. Yeah, it's very hidden.
To the extent that helps anyone. That's a little bit hidden, but they had a good crowd working on a Friday night. So,
which some people like that, though. They like the little hidden, because once we got in there, it wasn't like we were in City Center anymore. Did you feel like that? I'm like,
yeah, no, it felt
like we were somewhere else.
Yeah.
Outside of Houston, which was great.
Yeah, I mean, favorites of mine, the pork and shrimp dumplings were very good. The signature, the Pepper Twins chicken, I really enjoyed that. The sticky rice on top of the pork ribs. You know, even the Szechuan marinated cucumbers.
Those were like a hit.
Spicy, crispy, very fresh tasting, very vibrant. Really enjoyed that. I know you like the lamb dish.
Yes, it was the lamb leg griddle. Oh, it was so good. And I love the spice. Where the chicken, we love the chicken, and it was so spicy. Like, so if someone's not into spicy, I would maybe ask for a medium spice dish, or ask them if they can do medium spice. But it's amazing. And the lamb, you know, the flavor of the lamb next to all that spice, ugh, was amazing. And I love the dumplings too.
Yeah. Those dumplings. And I will say we went out for a drink afterwards, and Milano Bar, underrated.
It's so underrated.
Really good whiskey selection. Really, I mean, quality cocktails. I mean, I drank Michter's 10 bourbon for $25. And I won't say where, but I went to a restaurant the very next day that had the same pour at $50.
Oh, wow.
So I feel like I got a deal.
Yeah, the bar. And, you know, I've always really liked the bar. But, like, this was like a Friday night after we went to dinner. It had a nice crowd. The bartenders are very knowledgeable, far as you can order something off the menu, or they can kind of create something based on what you tell them you like, which, you know, that's what I call a bartender, right? Not someone just serving drinks. So it's very underrated. It's a good night.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we're running way long, but did you have one favorite bite from Chef Fest?
I did. It would have been the Korean pork from Patrick.
Yeah, from Fiji's Barbecue.
Yeah, it was delicious.
Yeah, and then I have to say, I was very impressed with Chef Sky Hance's tart, like little pastry tart mm-hmm. with marinated and pickled vegetables on it. I just, not someone I was personally familiar with, but someone who's, I think I talked to her for a minute. She's kind of stepping up in terms of doing more pop-ups and becoming more of a presence on the food scene. So someone to watch. I always like that when I feel like I learned something at these.
Yeah, times. I thought it was good. It just was, you know, that pork, that whole Korean aspect, kind of with the little spice.
Oh yeah, with the funk. It
was really good. Patrick was very proud of himself.
Yeah, and he should be.
And if not saying for sure, but they did a lot of pork. Maybe appear, maybe on the menu this week in form of a sandwich.
Yeah, might show up as a special at Fiji's Barbecue.
So check that out.
All right, Felice, thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric. I'll see you soon.
And I will be right back with Jason Gould and Alex Padilla.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
I'm joined this week by chefs Alex Padilla and Jason Gould from the original Ninfas on Navigation, seem to be the original Ninfas in Uptown. Gentlemen, I'm going to introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Alex, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, hey, hey. Happy. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on your show.
And Jason, welcome.
Thank you very much.
I don't think people are going to have too much difficulty
there's
differentiating
a little accent difference.
Who's talking when. I feel like we have a lot to discuss, but I want to kind of start with this because you both have these kind of crazy fine dining pedigrees, and now you're working at a Tex-Mex restaurant, which does not have that kind of legacy. Alex, why don't we start with you? Can you just talk a little bit about your career in California and then how you came back to Houston to become the chef at Ninfas?
Thank you. Well, I went to school here in Houston, Wayfield and Bemmel, right off 1960 area, 45 North. And at that time, I was, you know, 16, 17, and my mom used to work for Ninfas, the original Ninfas. So as soon as I turned 18, I left Houston, and I ended up in New Jersey, New York, and finally my last stop was San Francisco, where I met Nancy Oaks, one of the best females chef back in the West Coast.
Yeah, multiple James Beard Award winner.
Multiple. I was at that time I was there, and we wrote a book together, to Boulevard Book. My name is all over. I create a lot of stuff, a lot of that. And, you know, while working in a lot of events in Germany, we did a couple events with Thomas Keller and all those big names on the, you know, West Coast. I picked a lot of that, and I put that under my belt. It's California, European, basically much influence on my cuisine.
French-inspired, very ingredient-driven.
French ingredients, fresh ingredients. And, you know, I'm using all that experience on Ninfas already. As you can see, I changed all the ingredients for best ingredients. I do not eat lard, and that was one of the first things I took off the menu, and I started using olive oils, kosher salt, and fresh ingredients.
Even in the refried beans?
Even in the refried beans. I'm sorry to say that, but not even the tortilla has got lard. It's got a vegetable chutney on it.
And then
people love it.
Right. Then Jason, how about you? Because I think a lot of people remember that you were working at Gravitas. How did you kind of come to Gravitas? So I
was fortunate and unfortunate. I was in Australia, did all my apprenticeship, all my training in Australia, and at the time, the best thing a chef could do in Australia was go to London, get experience in London, which seems a little strange to say because most of the time English food is considered to be lowbrow cuisine. But, of course, this was the time of Marco Pierre White, who most people don't seem to know, but he was the one that taught Gordon Ramsay. So he was the first sort of celebrity chef. So I ended up getting a job at his restaurant called the Mirabelle, did that for a couple of years, and then was working around Europe, worked in Austria for about a year, kept traveling, and got being based in London, I got travel bug. So I just kept going and going and going. My plan was to come here or come to the United States. And I arrived in New York in about beginning of August in 2001. And so I had just handed out my resume to different places when 9/11 happened. So actually I was very fortunate in the fact that I moved out of downtown Manhattan on September 10th. and moved out to Queens to a place where I was going to live and try and work. And of course, as everybody says, you can't live in New York and not work. It's far too expensive. So I had an aunt in Houston, traveled down to Houston and landed a job with at Aries. And so Scott and I ran Aries for a couple of years, his restaurant, but we worked together as a team and put out menus and things like that, which was really cool at the time. It was kind of, at its time, the only real chef-driven restaurant around. There was a couple of others, but he was bringing in California-style cuisine and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that was the one at Montrose in Richmond,
correct,
right? That was on that short list of the best restaurants in Houston at the time.
At the time, yeah. It had already got 3 stars, all that sort of stuff, local. And so, but we kind of saw the writing on the wall that fine dining, as secular as it is, was dying out. And so we decided to do Gravitas together. And put everything into Gravitas. Ran it, operated it for 5 years, and then unfortunately had a falling out. And I was the one that lost out on everything. And at that time, Cyclone Anaya's was looking to sort of diversify. And so I joined Cyclone Anaya's and was with them for 8 years, and with the hope of always having something different. Like, we weren't just going to do Cyclone Anaya's, we're going to do different concepts. I had different concepts up my sleeve. He wanted to invest in properties and business. So that was on the cards and just never eventuated. And so when they sold all their Houston locations and only had the Austin location, I was driving back and forth and I'm like, no, I'm not doing this all the time. Far too much. So we parted ways, and my wife, Rebecca, actually worked for Jonathan back when he was at the Tasting Room. So we had a relationship, and knowing that he was with the Greater Houston Restaurant Association, I reached out and said, hey, do you know anybody looking? Because I knew that getting a gig was going to be a little bit challenging. And he said, hey, we're looking to expand. We've got a couple of opportunities. Why don't you join the team? And so that's how it kind of eventuated.
I think one of the things about Ninfa's that I find so interesting is it's a restaurant that opened in the early 70s. It is a bona fide Houston institution. It is very famous for having been the place where fajitas, like tacos al carbon, fajitas kind of originated and spread around the world. How do you balance the tradition, the memories, the expectations that people have when they go to eat there with, you know, this fine dining background and your pedigree for wanting to innovate and keep things interesting? Yeah, Alex, start with you. You're the one who's been doing it for 10 years. Yeah.
First of all, it's an iconic place. You're right. It's a lot of history behind what Mama Ninfa's created back in the 70s. To me, it's a great honor. And on top of that, you know, my mom used to work for Ninfa, so I got it double, like, I have to keep it good for them. Ninfa's, I know people see it just like another Tex-Mex restaurant, but it's not. It's a different when you got a real chef and you got kitchen managers, and that's most of the cases in a lot of the restaurants in Houston. They don't have a real chef. They had what they call kitchen managers. It's people that they've been there forever and they decide just to put it
in. Right, they just execute the recipes, right? They're not innovating.
They don't create recipes. They don't, you know, they don't have the vision. They've never been in fine dinings or had the spirit to travel and learn other, you know, countries like Europe or even here in the United States, other cities like the San Francisco, New York, Chicago.
They're good cooks. They're not chefs.
They're really good cooks. You know. I'm not saying they're not really good cooks. They are really good cooks, but what I mean is they don't have the experience, you know, to see the other level of high-end cuisines.
Right. So I guess what I'm saying is, but you do have those experiences. So what are you doing at Ninfa's to fuel that creative side, to keep yourself invested intellectually in the work that you do every day?
First of all, I invest a lot of time in the beginning training these people, putting them on, you know, getting certified by the city and realize that the team's got a way to do it, not just, you know, put everything in the satay pan. Everything has the time and the right seasonings, and I mean, use the fresh ingredients instead of open cans, and make everything from the scratch. No shortcuts, and just do it right and do it, you know, once. Consistency.
Sure,
it's probably the biggest thing. Like, obviously, Alex is still going to be the chef of Ninfa's. I'm not replacing him. I'm going to execute what his menu is at a new location. I think that the biggest thing we both bring to the table is being able to fine tune it enough so that it is consistent no matter when you come in the door. Because whether it's fine dining, you pick up on all those little details and you're putting micro garnishes on things, or whether you're cooking 50 pounds of rice, it has to be the same every single time. And I think that is where we kind of come in. It's like we're able to pay attention to those details as well as running the kitchen.
Well, I mean, Ninfa's is, there are very few restaurants that are as famous, or, you know, when I have family come in from out of town and they want Tex-Mex and barbecue, I mean, Ninfa's is on that list of places to go.
That's right. And it needs to be the same when they came in the last time as they come in this time. Now, the one thing that they have that you have that's different is nostalgia, right? You can't replace nostalgia. You can't replicate nostalgia. You have it because you've been there with family and things like that.
Right. I mean, for me, you know, it's going there in the 90s with my father and seeing Mama Ninfa sitting at a table next to the hostess stand greeting people.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people feel that way, right? That they have those memories. So do you ever get pushback from diners who are like, you've changed it too much?
Actually, the only feedbacks we get is like, because, you know, about a year ago, we switched the wood-burning ovens and wood-burning grill. And some people, they were used to the gas grill. And I said, well, now we're doing the real tacos al carbón, because tacos al carbón really means cooking charcoal. That's what it really means. And the meaning, I didn't say that in a bad way. It's just to make people understand what's the difference between wood and gas grill.
Right. Now they taste a little bit like smoke, which I think the meat has a little bit of a smoky aroma, which I think people would like.
Which we're in Texas. We're in the right town for those flavors. You know that.
Well, good. I mean, you guys are on a really incredible run in terms of the acclaim coming to the restaurant. I mean, you were just featured in an Andrew Zimmern show. I mean, and even more importantly, you just got your first ever James Beard Award semifinalist nomination for Outstanding Restaurant, which is a national award. So there's, you know, 25 nominees nationwide, and you're the only one from Houston. What? Did you know that was coming? I mean, did you have any expectation that was coming?
Well, I, you know, after I saw everything in Boulevard, you know, I was expecting. Well, I know that it's mostly high end restaurants that get picked by this grand prize. But when I was telling my mom about this, she, after 45 years, I said, Ninfa's is nominated, and she was crying. She was so happy. It's like Jesse was telling, it's that nostalgia that people had, you know, those great momentos that will never leave your mind. I still have people say, hey, I remember Mama Ninfa's when she used to roll a tortilla and hand it to me right, you know, in front of the restaurant. And it's, I mean, I saw that, but I never pay attention back then because I was just 16, 15 years old, you know. But now it's like I feel like I'm cleaning a piece of jewel, the Mama Ninfa's Dean had the time to do it. So I have to care with that.
Yeah, I mean, Jason, this is like a really exciting time to be joining the company. I mean, not just the uptown location in Boulevard Place, but I mean, you guys are working on a fast casual concept too.
Yep. Yeah, we have. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the company. Tacos and tortas. Alex is in the stage of developing out the menu, and we're finalizing a couple of leases on locations and things like that. So, yeah, for a company that has been, as Legacy has been around for a long time now, it's interesting to see the growth and be a part of it. But, yeah, to walk in and, I mean, I've only been with the company for a month, and all of a sudden I was actually off the last week and I got this text message. Do you hear the news? I'm like, no, I'm on holidays. Like, oh, yeah, we just got nominated for James Beard. I was like, wow, that's, I mean, to even be nominated is such a,
yeah, I think,
huge.
And Alex makes a really good point. I mean, the restaurants that are usually nominated and that win that award every year are like fine dining, you know, tasting menu, whatever. You know, they're not open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week, you know, 800 covers on a Friday.
But I think one of the things that restaurants are seeing a resurgence in is longevity, because somebody was talking about something the other day, and it's like, I've been here for 17 years. I've witnessed so many openings and closings of restaurants. It just goes to show how challenging it is to stay open. And when you've been open for this long, it's such a testament to what it is. And I think, yes, it's not fine dining, but you've been able to keep up with everything and still stay relevant. It's a huge thing. I mean, there's not many restaurants that can say that. There's fortunately a few in Houston, but nationwide, there's not many restaurants that can do that. And I think the focus is kind of, you know, as a foodie, I hate using that word, but as a foodie, you're not just looking for something that's new. You're always looking for something that's a little bit retro or a little bit that's been around and withstood the test of time to still be relevant. And I think that's what the award is sort of saying. It's not that they're saying you're the best restaurant. It's saying you're a significant restaurant because you have been open for so long. You created a dish that is now international. I mean, how many restaurants can say that they've got a dish that is now international? You know, that's a huge thing.
You must be talking about the fajita burger, huh?
Not quite international.
Not quite, okay.
I mean,
but it will be.
Yeah, Alex, tell us a little about Mama Ninfa's Tacos y Tortas, the fast casual concept you guys are working on.
Well, if you remember, because I know you remember, Ninfa's used to sell burritos and all that kind of stuff, a lot of fried stuff that I remove out of the menu.
I mean, my issue is I know I've said this to you privately, I go to Ninfa's and I basically want chips and queso followed by fajitas with a frozen margarita. Like, I know there's other stuff on the menu, but if you, some of that stuff, if you took it off, like, I would never know because I come there with a plan.
Well, that is where I'm going. I was reserving those for this kind of concept. Now it's the time to bring in the back with a little bit of twist.
The margaritas will be there too.
Margarita's going to be there. Chile con queso is still there. Fajitas is going to be there. But tacos and tortas, Mama Ninfa's tacos and tortas, I think it's a great concept for those work downtown area. They're always in a hurry to, you know, grab lunch. We're going to have like a grab-and-go tortas and tacos. I don't want to call burritos, but I want to call wraps. But it's the same thing. I try to stay away with rice and beans and the burritos, but it's going to be plenty meat. And there's still rice and beans on the side if you want them, but I don't want to use that as a filler.
Not a Chipotle burrito.
No. This is Mama Ninfa's, behind Mama Ninfa's memories.
And then Jason, how's the Uptown location looking? I'm how about June?
Before June. We're paying. Fortunately, it's just a renovation, so a lot of the plumbing, electrical, the stuff that, you know, grease trap, all that sort of stuff that usually takes a long period of time to get approved and get set is already there. So it's just renovations. However, the attention to details there, like the amount of tile they're putting in that place, it's significant. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but we're still optimistic that by May we should be opening the doors. So
yeah, I mean, the one thing I remember about the Pesca space is that the kitchen was huge.
It is a large space. We've kind of turned it a little bit. So where they had their expo going into the kitchen, into the service station, we're having that facing the dining room. So now you have a linear line going to the dining room. And, you know, I mean, Ninfa's worked out of a tiny kitchen for many, many years. They fortunately had a renovation a couple of years ago that increased the space. But my challenge is to work out how to get all the food that is on the Ninfa's menu out of that one line. We've added a wood-burning grill and a wood-burning oven to get those flavors in there. But yeah, it's a big kitchen, but it's still going to be a challenge. It's one of those things that's almost too much space.
And then, you know, again, when I was growing up in Houston in the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of Ninfa's locations. And then, you know, for a variety of reasons, most of them are gone now. Do you hear from people who are like, ooh, I don't know, like people who don't understand that it's a new ownership group and a new chef that
there's a few. Yeah, we've had to kind of set it straight and say they were franchisees. This is the first time that the original Ninfa's has ever done a second location. So that's it's a big deal. You know, it's a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of expectations coming with this.
Oh, yeah. No, there is.
Most of the people right now, it's a Ninfa's living around this area. So they really, really excited about the new place.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know, your new location is going to be roughly a mile from the Culture Map office. So this is, you're going to be our happy hour spot. I mean, I'm excited about it.
The challenge right now is finding the sign big enough, because we're changing the name from Nymphas to the James Beard Award nominated original Nymphas on navigation, and then the James Beard Award associated restaurant. Of, so I was trying to fit all that on a billboard. That's a challenge.
Yeah, it's a really big sign. And it's a very long URL for a website. So you may want to just think about
we
that.
We haven't thought of acronyms or anything. We're going to break it all down. So,
Alex, and then I did want to shift, I did want to shift perspectives just a little bit. You were the winner of the Choose cooking competition
last year.
Just what was that experience like? I mean, what was your winning dish?
My winning dish was a Texas toast. Actually, there was I used ribeye, and I make like a arugula salad with asparagus and citrus vinaigrette. They only give you 20 minutes, and those 20 minutes on TV, they fly by really quick. Yeah. And I cook a fish on my father's memory, and I cook one of those red snappers, drunkard red snapper. You know, my father, I feel weird to say, but he was having problems when he was young with alcohol, but he loved fishing, and the best thing for him was the whole fish, grill whole fish and, you know, a beer course or whatever. And that stick to me, and I cooked that for him, actually, the drunk red snapper.
So do you fish now?
I do, but I don't drink like my father. It's something wrong with me. I don't drink. I don't smoke neither, so.
You're the only chef in town, I think, that doesn't drink.
Well, you know what? It's not the first time they say, well, if you're a chef, why you don't have a lot of tattoos on you? I say, I used to live in San Francisco. It's a hippie town. I love San Francisco. I love tattoos. Don't get me wrong, but my family is really hard on that.
Oh, yeah,
it's
no.
It's about family thing.
Oh, what, they're handing out awards now for chefs without tattoos. You see that came out? Yeah. Not many of us around.
Do you want to do more TV? Is that something you aspire to?
Sure. I think TV, it's a great, it's like the radio. I mean, it's a great, how can I, it's a great way that people know who's behind, you know, that Alex Padilla is, who is Alex Padilla is. You can express yourself, you can be yourself, you can sneeze, you can cough, you can do whatever you want, and you know, it still make it fun. Going back to New York, it's a great city. I had a lot of good time. I met all those guys that I always wanted to meet, like those chefs. You know, for me, they were like a big celebrity guys. I used to watch the American Iron Chef, and Simon was there. You know, it's like one of the guys I always wanted to meet. It's a great guy. It's a phenomenal, like, a human being. It's incredible.
Yeah. And then, Jason, I know when Ryan LaShane was on the show recently, he said you guys had talked about a Gravitas revival dinner.
Yeah, that's the plan. We're going to set a date. But, yeah, that is the plan. I mean, I give him a hard time because when he did all these press releases, it was all about Catalan, working with Chris and working with Brian. I'm like, what about me? He didn't give me any love whatsoever. So now he's going to pay me back by doing a Gravitas throwback menu. So I had to get up in the attic and find a few of the menus the other day. But, yeah, we're working on it.
All right. So. Well, gentlemen, that brings me to the end of my questions. I always like to wrap these interviews up with something I call the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind.
That could be dangerous.
Jason, let me start with you. What's your favorite cookbook?
Oh, yeah. LaRue's Gastronomy.
Alex, how about you?
I love everything. You're asking the wrong. I mean, I'm pretty good.
What's the last cookbook you read or bought?
Bouchon.
Very nice. Alex, what's the first band you ever saw in concert?
Eagles.
Jason?
Australian guy called Jimmy Barnes. Most people wouldn't have heard of him.
I was kind of hoping you were going to say Men at Work.
No, I've never seen them in concert. I get enough with just hearing the song.
Jason, what is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
McDonald's cheeseburger.
Alex?
It's the cheese. It's the meat to cheese ratio. It's just there's something about it.
I want to keep it local. Whataburger.
Alex, who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Houston.
No. It's got to be a – who's your favorite athlete, your favorite athlete from a Houston sports team?
Athlete. I would say I like the whole team, you know, the Houston Astros, but I could say Altuve.
Yeah. Jason, how about you?
I'll stay with the Astros and say Biggio.
And then finally, Jason, what is your go-to pizza order?
Am I allowed to say this on air?
Yeah.
Hawaiian.
You're not the first.
That's the go-to. I mean, otherwise, it's like if I just have to pick it out, it's like I can get it for the kids. I can get it for me. It's easy. It's simple. I don't have to worry about it.
Alex, how about you?
Margarita.
Gentlemen, give us the website and the social media and all that for Ninfas.
There's a couple. There's ninfas.com, and then there's Legacy Restaurants are the two. So
awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
It's a great honor.
You can follow me on Twitter at @esandler, on Instagram at @ericsandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.